Welcome to Composer's Favorites, a podcast by Film Scoring Tips. I am Giovanni Rotondo, and today we're going to learn more about composer Shai Rozzo's favorite things. Enjoy the show! Today's guest is a composer and a music editor, winner of multiple Golden Reel Awards. He worked on many hit movies and TV shows, among which Avengers: Age of Ultron, Oz the Great and Powerful, Desperate Housewives, and Stargirl. Welcome to Composer's Favorite, Shai Rozzo.
Hello.
So I've known you for a very long time. So some of these favorites I knew already, but for those who don't know you very well, we'll start with your favorite book.
To Kill a Mockingbird. I mean, my son's middle name is Atticus, after Atticus Finch.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
That's very cool.
It was almost his first name, but we wanted a name that works in both Hebrew and English, because I'm Israeli and for the heritage of it. Mm-hmm. And my mom couldn't even pronounce Atticus, so, and there is no Hebrew version of it, so it ended up being his middle name.
This is so cool. And tell me more about the book. Why is it your favorite?
I think I love the idea of a man who's essentially just a regular man doing his best in a small town in a different, difficult circumstance. And he's very well regarded, but he knows that what he's doing is going against sort of the mob mentality of the town, but it's still the right thing to do. And his whole thing is like, it's the right thing to do, so it's what I have to do. And he's raising these kids on his own and trying to set a good example and do his best. And there's something about that that speaks to me. Where, you know, I try to be more like Atticus Finch.
From your words, I was saying, it reminds me a little bit of you.
I try. I don't know that I'm anywhere near as good as this fictional character, but I genuinely try.
And your favorite film is To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah.
So that's great, actually.
Well, I love the story. Gregory Peck is amazing. It's like, I love films that are stories. I'm much more interested in stories than I am really cool visual effects. Like, if the visual effects serve the story, that's great. But if a film is just about the stunts and stuff, and the story is just to string together a bunch of stunts or effects, that's like a roller coaster ride. It's really fun, but it doesn't stick with me. A great story sticks with me. And also, it has one of the best scores ever written in the history of film scoring. So what's not to like?
Amazing. Let's change slightly topic and your favorite songwriter, Paul McCartney.
Yes.
There's so much to say about him. Why is he your favorite?
He's the greatest songwriter that ever lived. I mean, he's... The amount of talent that man has is just not fair to the rest of us mere mortals. It's just, you know, he's written some of the greatest songs ever written. The amount of product that he produces, the variety of styles and things that he does, the fact that he'll go work with Kanye West and do a bunch of stuff and then leave it. And then it comes back completely transformed and changed. And he's like, huh, never would have thought of that, but cool. The fact that he pushes himself always in different directions, tries new things. And then he seems to be a genuinely good human being. You know, he does a lot of charity, a lot of advocacy. I mean, yeah, it's just he's written some of the greatest songs ever. Again, when you think about things that stick to you, to me, it's usually like emotional stuff and things. And you know, like Let It Be is a perfect song. You know, Penny Lane is a perfect song, and Penny Lane is a fun, light song, but it tells a story that sticks with you. You know, Eleanor Rigby tells, you know, a series of stories that stick with you. Just amazing stuff.
Sometimes it not only makes you think, but it, in the process, it kind of makes you a better person.
Yeah, and it's just he writes. I think his lyrics are poetry. I think his melodies, more often than not, are amazing. They're catchy. They're easy. They feel inevitable. It's like when you hear a song of his, a new song of his, more often than not, it feels like you've heard it before, even though you haven't. It has that sense of inevitability where it's like, oh yeah, I know how this feels. I know what this is doing. That's magical. It's super cool. I mean, all great songs do that. That's, you know, Adele's new hit single, she's just what? Her singing with this amazing instrument that she has, a piano and a bit of drum machine, and that's it, you know? But it's a good song. It's well written. It, you know, you follow it well. It's easy to, you know, it's catchy and it's emotional. It just grabs you right there. You can relate and you feel that it's honest.
That's true. Have you ever met the guy?
I have not. I missed meeting him by about 5 minutes many years ago when I was at Abbey Road.
Oh no.
I met Ringo Starr and I met George Martin, but I've not met Paul McCartney, and I would love to.
Let's talk about your favorite non-music activity. I love hanging out with my wife and kids.
Oh yeah,
So, yeah, that's pretty awesome. And
I know I'm not that exciting. I just like being with my family and you know, like I mean I married the girl woman because I love her and I like her company and she's my best friend.
I remember when you had your first kid, I asked you, how does it feel to have kids? And you said something along the lines of, it's contemporarily the most beautiful and scary feeling that you'll ever feel in your life.
Yes. It hasn't changed much. You have kids now, I'm sure you feel similarly.
Exactly. When I got my kids, I thought of you. I thought of those words. You were absolutely right. I was hoping the fear could be a little bit, could go a little bit away, but no, does it?
I think I'm slight. I don't know if I'm slightly less terrified now that, you know, they're older. I mean, they're 10 and 12. They're still young. I don't know if a little bit of the fear have subsided or if I'm just used to living with it. But yeah, it's like every time I see my 10-year-old's really into parkour now, and he's very physical and active, and every time I see him like try to do a flip or something, it's like, don't break your neck, don't break your neck, you know. But at the same time, you have to let them, you know, you have to let him, you have to let him fall and scrape his knee, and you know, but it's terrifying, and at the same time, it's wonderful.
When you said which your favorite hobbies are, I remember two of the three you
Okay.
told me about. I remember you loved scuba diving. I remember you loved photography. So I'm gonna ask you specifically about the third one, horse riding. I didn't know that.
I used to ride growing up. When I was a kid, I would ride every week.
I didn't have no idea, really.
And yeah, I used to do, I rode English, I did dressage,
Oh wow.
and I would do jumping.
With all the whole setup with the jacket and all tidy.
No, jeans and t-shirt. I was a wild one.
Cowboy style.
But I would do jumping, and my teachers kept wanting me to do competition. Well, they were very frustrated with me because I was very, like, I have very good control of the horse, but I don't have the best posture or all of that. And you get, you know, it's like you have to look right and you have to be able to jump high. I could jump really high. Like, they're like, you should enter these, just tighten your form up a little bit. And they wanted me to compete in tournaments because, like, you jump higher than anybody else we know in your age group or whatever. I was fearless. I was like, nah, I just want to have fun. So I never got into the competition and the dressing up and all of that stuff. I just rode. And, you know, I take the horses out and canter, and I'm like, you know, just let them go as fast as I could possibly let them go and stuff like that. And then I started learning a few basic stunts, which was fun. A lot of falling when you're learning stunts on horses. But again, I was fearless as a kid, so I was like,
Do you mean like standing on the horse or stuff like that?
So I learned things like where we would get like a lance and we'd put a carton of milk in the middle of the thing and you'd lean sideways on the saddle nice and low and stab the carton. I learned a trick where you get the horse to trot and you post and you undo the cinch and bring it over and then you're like up, 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 up and you whoop up. You just pull off the saddle, drop it on the ground, and you keep going bareback.
Oh, wow.
And the first 10, 15 times you do it, you pull at it, you lose your balance, it's no longer attached, and you fall.
Oh, no.
But after a few times, you learn to time it just right and pull it hard enough, and it works. And the first time you do it, it's like, oh, I can't believe it, and you fall. But then you do it again, and you're like, okay, this time after you do it, don't fall. So I would do stuff like that. I'd rear them up on their hind legs, you know, like Hi-Ho Silver,
Yeah,
stuff like that.
that's awesome.
And my kids ride now, which is
Oh,
really
really?
nice.
So you can
Yeah, they just started a little while ago.
give them tips.
Ethan really, really loves it. Yeah, he was just riding today.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Your favorite holiday destination? It's a toss-up between two very different places, Maui and Rome.
Yes.
Tell me more.
Well, I think Rome is the most incredible city I've ever visited. And I mean, I grew up in Israel where we have Jerusalem, which is also an incredible city. But Rome, there's so much art, museums, antiquities. Gelato. Everybody speaks Italian, which is such a lovely sounding language. I love the sound of Italian. I wish I could speak it. I understand very, very little. I know a few words, but that's it.
I know for a fact you can speak a little Italian.
Just a tiny, tiny, tiny bit. I took some Italian in college. Not a lot stuck with me. Just the whole vibe of the place. Just I've been there 3 times now, thanks to you, and I've just fallen in love with the place. And Maui is just paradise. And it's like beautiful weather. You've got these beautiful beaches where the sand is so soft and like fine. Gorgeous scuba diving. I love diving in Hawaii, especially Maui. A visibility is great. You've got giant green sea turtles, which is awesome because they're so gentle and relatively slow, so they're easy to hang out with and see. You can dive through lava tubes. There's a wonderful little dive site I know called the Five Graves, or also known as the Five Caves. There's a little white-tipped shark that likes to hang out there. You can go say hi to him. Or you can go to the other side of the island, and do the road to Hana, and it's just gorgeous and so much beauty of nature. Just do these hiking trails to waterfalls or natural pools. We went ziplining there with the kids on the road to Hana somewhere, which was really fun.
So before we part ways today, I'd like to ask you about two upcoming projects of yours. One is Monologue, and the other is The Last of the Winthrops,
yes,
which you scored, right?
Yes. So Monologue is this incredible independent film where a couple of years ago, a director friend of mine shared a GoFundMe on Facebook. And I looked at it, and it was for this independent film, and they did this trailer, and I was like, this looks really good. The music's awful, but the trailer looks really good. And so I reached out to my friend. I said, do you know if they have a composer? He's like, I don't know. Let me find out. And so he's like, no. I said, can you introduce me? So he did. And I spoke to the filmmaker. I was like, tell me more about this project. This trailer looks amazing. And what he told me is that the film he's making is called Monologue because the entire film is a monologue. There are no traditional dialogue scenes. It's all narrated beginning to end.
Oh, wow.
And it's a love story, so it's just a beautiful story. And I, as I mentioned earlier, I like stories. Mm-hmm. It's just this beautiful love story. Boy meets girl, you know, they fall in love. Things are good. Things are not so good. Things change, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to ruin the specifics of it. But there's no traditional dialogue scenes. It's just narrated as you see the images. And you do hear some production sound or some words here and there, but none of it is important or critical. And as I looked at it, I went, and we were talking about spotting it, we realized there's only two cues in the entire movie. The first one starts pretty much at the beginning and goes until we're about 56 minutes into the movie. Then there's a short break, and then the music comes in again and stays all the way until the end of the movie, 17 minutes later. And the idea of trying to score continuous music for that long and never have it be boring wallpaper, but never have it steal the spotlight, not have it overstay its welcome, and not have it feel like, oh my God, enough already, I thought was a huge and interesting challenge. So I was like, yeah, let's do that. And then once I started doing it, I was like, oh dear God, what have you gotten yourself into? But I think we pulled it off, and you know, the film's now submitting to festivals and looking for distribution and stuff. And it's a really, really special movie, and I love it.
Sounds
so
super interesting. I can't wait to see it. As soon as it comes out, I'll send you a detailed review.
Well, thank you. And The Last of the Winthrops is this really fascinating documentary where a producer friend recommended me to this producer who was working on this documentary. And it's about this woman called Vivian Winthrop, and you can go to thelastofthewinthrops.com. They have a website now with the trailer and stuff, and I'm waiting to find out the details of distribution and all of that. But this is a woman who grew up in a family whose roots go all the way back to the founding of the United States. Her great, 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 however many great grandfathers ago was the first governor of Massachusetts, and like literally the founding of the United States. Her, you know, she's got this long famous heritage, and I think she was 48, 49 or something like that when she found out that her father was in fact not her biological father.
Oh, wow.
And she's got this whole other biological family and half siblings that she never knew about. Which found her through a DNA test. You know, they both did like an ancestry.com DNA test and happened to connect through that. So it's a fascinating documentary where she's exploring the roots of her heritage that she grew up with, the new family, and it's this beautiful exploration of who are we? Are we who we are biologically? Are we a product of our environment? Is it a little bit of both? Is it, you know, it's about self-identity. And so it's a really interesting project, and another one that I did through the pandemic. So scoring everything remotely and all of that kind of those challenges, a lot of music, very, very different type of score. But that was another really fun one to score that I hope comes out soon.
That's amazing. I can't wait. I'm always been a fan of your music, and I'm sure this one will not disappoint. Shai, thank you so much for coming to the show. It's been a real pleasure.
Well, thank you for having me. It's very kind of you to ask.
That's our show for today. We like to make our episodes roughly the same length. Therefore, we sometimes edit out some of the guests' favorites. However, extended cuts of the show are available to our Patreon subscribers. Check filmscoringtips.com/content to find more about this. Thanks for joining us, and see you soon.